This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
The Bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up.
Up this morning, boys.
Oh, yes. Oh, the Bills make me want to shout. The Billies back on the board with a W against one of the most pathetic offenses in NFL history, led by Trevor Siemian and Tony Jones Jr. Man, the Saints are in some big-time trouble, but all the troubles for the Buffalo Bills seem to be in the rear view. Welcome into First Up, Aaron Krulnick and Carlo Koliakovo with you on a Friday morning, a feel-good Friday for one Carlo Koliakovo in that. Yeah, man, the Bills, 31-6, never really in doubt. A couple of interceptions for Josh Allen in the first half, but I think overall you have to be pretty pleased about what you saw from your boys in blue yesterday.
I sure do, buddy. And I think when you talk about how I feel today, yeah, I'm happy the Bills won, but I'm more excited to say TGIF, baby.
That's true.
Oh, man, does it feel good to be Friday, heading into an unbelievable slate for the weekend starting tonight. You're talking about Black Friday today, and we should do some Black Friday conversations here. Maybe the poll question should be, What's the one thing in sports that you want a deal on? And ask people to like
Jack Campbell's contract?
Right? There's so much that you could think about for that question. Make it Black Friday related, but like, I'm not going to lie to you, man. It was kind of a weird day of watching football. I mean, oh man, that game between the Bears and the Lions was everything as advertised.
Exactly.
Awful. It's not good, eh?
Awful. And, you know, that Cowboys game was really exciting because there was a lot of points scored, but also really frustrating, too, with all the penalties that were thrown in that game. And it's like, what is the NFL doing with these referees and the flags that they throw? And it just really makes you scratch your head. And, you know, the late game finished off the way it should have with the Bills. You called it, blowing out the New Orleans Saints as expected, as they should have played. But I tell you what, man, watching that first half, I was irate at Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills because they only went into the half up 10-0. And as good as they played in the first half, they should have been up 21-0 against the New Orleans team. And Josh Allen, too careless turnovers late in the half there, and it just made you wonder. It's like, what is this team doing? Why can't they get over the hump? Well, my good friend in Buffalo, Jason, if you're listening, he texted me and he says, all is good. Bills are the best second half team in the league. And what do you know? They come out and absolutely take over in the second half. And I get to hear that song this morning, man. What a pick me up. It's like, I was kind of sluggish coming down here this morning, you know, trying to prep for the show in the morning and seeing what the, you know, the topics of conversation, obviously football was going to dominate. And all of a sudden when that song played, 20 Fingers perked me up. I was like, giddy up, baby. Let's go. It's Friday, baby. Yeah, let's go.
I'm sitting here with 20 Fingers, maybe like 5:45. I'm like, we should probably play the Bills song for Coco to get him going on this Friday morning. I'm glad that happened. I mean, you talk about Josh Allen, and you're absolutely right. It really was one of those things where he completed, I believe, what was it, 90% of it, 82.1% of his passes. That's a career high. Yeah. He matches career high with 4 pass touchdowns, but those picks, man, like, really, gosh, really ill-advised. He threw a pick for a 4th straight game. Like, 4 straight games to the pick, and that was his first red zone INT, the second interception in his career. So I guess if you want to take some solace in that, mistakes like that have not been common for Josh Allen, but whatever. You know, you move on, and I think the offense looked really good, and New Orleans has a really good defense.
They looked balanced, which is what excited me about yesterday. They looked really balanced. The addition of Matt Breida and the backfield.
Matt Breida, yeah. Matt Breida's their best running back. Like, Zach Moss is a healthy scratch. Devin Singletary has been average at best. Breida at least has some burst to him. I mean, that's been the thing about the Bills where it's like, okay, Josh Allen has to go back and throw it 40 times and run it 10 times. Now maybe Breida gives him a little bit more balance that could be advantageous in the second half of the season.
Agreed, and they need it, man, because the balance in their offense is what's going to make them successful. When you feel confident that you can get yards running the ball, it takes the pressure off of your offensive line to protect Josh Allen, and it gives Josh Allen more options when he sits back on play action to throw the ball, as we saw yesterday.
And not everything went according to plan for us yesterday. I mean, we had a lot of prop bets on the board, and DeAndre Swift's shoulder injury posed a significant
second play of the game. Like, come on.
Yeah, very early. That's DeAndre Swift, though. He gets banged up a lot. Unbelievably talented running back, but, you know, we should probably never be surprised when he goes down with any kind of injury. But unfortunately for us, we were big-time DeAndre Swift backers as far as the props go. Now you owe me 200, so
yeah, I know.
No big deal. Who's counting, though?
Like, the thing that bothers me is the one thing I jump on with you guys, it didn't even get a chance because it was over after the second play. And you and 20 Fingers are just prop masters for the second game. You had
Michael Gallup.
Michael Gallup. Got to love that 42-yard reception that he made to get checks.
I think he had 9 yards in the first half. And almost 100 in a second alone. Well, Dak had what, 210 in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Like, he was just rifling the ball all over the field in the fourth quarter. I mean, Cedric Wilson and Noah Brown and Dalton Schultz picking up some big-time plays as well. And how about that kick return from Tony Pollard?
Unbelievable.
I mean, what a stud that guy is. If he was on any other team, maybe not any other team, but almost any other team, Tony Pollard would be regarded as one of the best running backs in the NFL. He's just stuck in a timeshare. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Tony Pollard is ridiculously talented, and he put it on full display again yesterday. But, you know, they paid Zeke Elliott $90 million, so you got to play him, right? It's not like they have much of a choice. So that's going to be a big boost to Dallas in the second half, those fresh legs of both Zeke and Tony Pollard. But a loss for the Cowboys, 36-33 in overtime. And the penalties, yeah, that's the big story from that game.
Man.
You know that was the most penalty yards in Dallas Cowboys history yesterday?
I mean, I'm like, not surprised.
That's a long and storied franchise. But, I mean, you got to feel for that Anthony Brown kid, the defensive back, who had 4 penalties called against him, all pass interference. Yeah. He's just like, oh, God, I'm so bad today. I can't buy a break. And that final one in OT was the one that sealed the deal for the Raiders. So,
and to be honest with you, like, 3 of those 4 penalties, to me, were not pass interference. Like, very, very tacky calls, especially the one in overtime. Like, I'm sometimes yelling at the TV when I think there should be a penalty, and it's ironic when you see the flag come out. But that play in overtime, man, it was an underthrown ball.
Yeah.
It was pretty good coverage. There wasn't much contact on the receiver, and I just wish the refs wouldn't be the deciding factors of the game, because literally you throw the flag there, it's over. They're in field goal range, right?
That could have easily been
a fair play and a fourth down punt. But the refs all game, you know, I'm reading this stat right now that the Cowboys had 110 penalty yards alone on third down in this game. Just on third down, 110 penalty yards. And I don't know what the exact number was. I think it was 28 penalties that were called in the game. Does that sound correct?
I think both had 14.
Between both teams?
Both teams had 14, yeah.
That's insane. Who wants to watch the referees take over the game? Especially on Thanksgiving Thursday, where the highlight of the game is the afternoon game with the Cowboys, and the refs take over and throw 28 flags? Come on.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
It was pretty lame, but, I mean, in spite of all the penalties, you know, it was a hell of a game. Very exciting. Derek Carr was awesome. DeSean Jackson, what a pickup for the Raiders.
Where he come
that
from?
Touchdown he had early, I mean, he looked awesome yesterday. He's got some juice left in those legs after all these years. That was impressive. My boy Hunter Renfrow picking up, I think it was 134, 135 yards
he
receiving
was
as
unreal,
well. So,
man.
Shout out to Hunter Renfrow. Also returns kicks. And that, he was really big because Darren Waller went down in, I think, the second quarter, maybe even earlier. And he didn't come back. So that's their best player. That's their best offensive player. with the Raiders, and Derek Carr, in spite of his absence, was able to rack up almost 400 yards passing. So congrats to the Raiders, who keep their playoff hopes alive, slim playoff hopes, but they do indeed remain alive. They're now 6-5, I believe.
They are.
Dallas.
Yes.
Dallas. I don't know. That division, all of a sudden.
They're keeping the Philadelphia Eagles alive in that division.
Philadelphia. Washington's able to pick up that win on Monday night. If Philly's able. Philly's got a cake schedule down the stretch. So Dallas could be blowing this division. Mark Rowe, yeah. Pierre LeBrun, not impressed at all this morning.
All.
So we'll get into that a little bit later, exactly what the state of the NFC East is. But coming up next, Toronto Maple Leafs in San Jose tonight. And it will not be Jack Campbell in goal. It will be Joseph Woll. Do you agree with Sheldon Keefe's decision, Coco? I'll ask you that question next. Toronto Maple Leafs back in action tonight in San Jose, California. 10:30 start here on the East Coast. It's going to be a late night, but it's Friday, so whatever. What are you going to do?
Yeah, who cares?
Enjoy it. Does not matter at all, but you will not see Jack Campbell in goal tonight for the Maple Leafs. You'll see Joseph Woll, and we had discussed this earlier in the week when Sheldon Keefe said it remained a possibility for Woll to get a start on this three-game California trip, and we both agreed tonight is the night if you're going to do it. I just wasn't sure the Leafs would actually do it, but it looks to me, based on practice and how Jack Campbell was absent there, and then he will be absent tonight in goal as well. The Leafs are very cognizant of Jack Campbell's workload. They want to minimize it at all times in any possible way because Woll had only started on the second half of back-to-back, and that's not the situation tonight.
No, it's not. And if you're Sheldon Keefe, you know, this is the right move because of two things. One, you're trying to give Jack Campbell a rest coming off a really emotional game for him, a return to L.A. And two, you don't want that much time to go by between Joseph Woll's last great start. I mean, you want to see if there's something there with him, and you want to see if there's a way he can keep the confidence and the mojo flowing with him because he came off a really impressive performance on Sunday where he got a shutout. And normally, you know, there's some coaches around the league that always have a rule with their goalies that if you get a shutout, you automatically play the next game. And, you know, you obviously weren't going to make that decision with Joseph Woll because he's a guy that's fresh and new to this lineup, and you want to get Jack Campbell back in there in a really important game. And the way the schedule sorted itself out, it's a return to LA, so you knew Woll, no matter what, wasn't going to get that start. But the Maple Leafs planned to go with a tandem this year when they signed Mrazek, and because of Mrazek's injury, that has not been an available option. So if you feel like you found something in just Joseph Woll, why not see if you can create a tandem with this guy and maximize the rest for your starting goaltender, who has been probably one of the best goaltenders in the league so far this season.
Absolutely. And we've seen Mrazek in practice. Clearly, he's getting closer returning from that groin injury. I would guess, just based on all the reports and the commentary, that Mrazek couldn't be more than a week or two away from getting back in net and being the tandem. But I was thinking about this yesterday because I was debating about Vezina Trophy odds. Which, I mean, it wouldn't surprise anybody. I had a big debate about the Vezina Trophy. And if Jack
You've been
Campbell
good at banging futures, though.
Well, I tend to agree. But you think about Jack Campbell and if he's a legitimate candidate to win the Vezina. And I was arguing no, because I don't think he's going to play enough games. I think down the stretch, I think once Mrazek gets back and rest will be prioritized for Jack Campbell. I mean, if you had to set an over-under on number of games started for Campbell, I mean, I think in a perfect world, he would have played fewer games for the Toronto Maple Leafs at this point than he already has. Like, what do you think, 50 games would be the maximum you'd see from Jack Campbell?
I think 55 should be the max, especially if you plan on riding this guy into what you hope and expect to be a long playoff run. But, again, we're not talking about Mike Babcock here where he has a number in mind and that's the number he sticks with. This has to be a fluid situation. You know, based on, you know, how Jack Campbell feels, how he's performing, how the team is playing. So you can have a plan in place that you try to follow along, you know, with each game, with each week, and with each month. But clearly, as a coach, you've got to adjust on the fly, and you've got to, you know, have good communication with your goaltender, evaluate what his practices are like, evaluate the workload in his practices, and just make a game-to-game observation as to how you plan to approach this. Because if you try to look any further and you stick to a plan, you're not really setting yourself up for, you know, maybe the success you envision, because you're always thinking to yourself, oh no, I can't stray off of the path. I can't stray off of the direction that we decided with our goaltenders. I think the way they've been going, and a lot of it has been, you know, out of their control because of the injury to Mrazek. But if they have something here in Joseph Woll, do it with him, because the Maple Leafs right now are in a stretch where you talk about the top teams in the past 4 weeks for just in points percentage alone. The Maple Leafs are first in the league with a 12-2 record. And if you just look at their record overall, you know, they've allowed themselves to afford being able to make these decisions because they banked a lot of points already and
exactly.
A lot of wins.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. They've earned the ability to do this, because if this is a team like Vancouver, for instance, it's not like they're like, all right, let's run out Joseph Woll here. Like they're in the exact opposite situation that the Toronto Maple Leafs in. And listen, if this was a playoff game, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Jack Campbell would be in tonight, but they're opposed by James Reimer, who's actually, if you look at the numbers, man, that guy's having an amazing season for San Jose. So that should be entertaining to see him in net against, I don't know how many former teammates he would still have. I guess Morgan Riley, and I don't know. But that's going to be interesting to note for sure. A big day of sports. We have the Leafs and Sharks at 10:30. The Indiana Pacers hosting your Toronto Raptors at 8. And at 4 o'clock, Bryson DeChambeau versus Brooks Koepka. The match returns. We'll tell you about the format and some of the trash talk between the two coming up next on First Up.
Oh, some sultry tunes spun by our technical producer, Chris 20 Fingers D'Avero. I know what's going on in his house tonight. That ain't PG-13. Welcome back to
candlelight and a bottle of vino.
Maybe some incense. My goodness, the D'Avero household is going to be popping off. And the action all starts today at 4 p.m., Coco, as Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau go head-to-head in the fifth edition of the match. And this is something, I think it was Dutty who said it yesterday on the show, where if this was 2 months ago, 3 months ago, this would be everybody just salivating at the prospect of watching this. Now it's kind of like, these guys, you know. Yeah, it really has. I will say that Koepka had a good line about the reason why this is a 12-hole match and not an 18-hole match like the four previous editions. Uh-huh. Here's what he says. Playing 12 holes is nice. I mean, it's better than playing 18 holes with Bryson. Anything to spend less time with him, I'm happy to do.
Starting his famous line is living rent-free, isn't it? And what that means is he's living rent-free in Bryson's head.
Oh, I think it's the other way around. I think Bryson lives in Brooks' head. Brooks is obsessed with Bryson and how he doesn't like him, and I don't think Bryson cares at all.
Okay, sure.
I mean, that's just the way I view it. I'm very pro-Bryson. I'm anti-Brooks, pro-Bryson. I don't know if I feel kind of on an island. Yeah, absolutely.
I think you are on an island, but I also like Brooks.
And I also like Brooks. I mean, I'm
not
Brooks,
shaming you for that, but I think you'd be one of the very few that would feel that way, don't you think?
Bryson's the man. He's awesome. Guy's great for golf. See some of his content with the boys on Good Good? Oh, good stuff. Big fan of Bryson, who supports the independent creators like the boys on Good Good. If you don't know Good Good, by the way, like, go on. If you're a big golf fan and you're not watching the Good Good content, man, you're missing out, because that's some good stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. Today at 4
p.m. How much actual chirping do you expect to see in this match? Because, like, this is one thing we've always talked about with the previous matches, where I've always said hire a comedian as the caddies or somebody that is the narrator in all this with a microphone, because these players weren't built to or haven't grown up with that mentality to chirp their opponents. So why would they do it in a setting like this unless somebody else is doing it and encouraging it? And look, everybody knows there's a beef between these guys. It's not any secret, and it has escalated to a point where they both needed a sit down before the Ryder Cup to basically say, boys, enough with the childish act. Like, come on, we're adults here. Either figure it out yourselves or find a way to fix it. Like, it's just do something with this, because clearly right now we can't have this affect our team goal in winning the Ryder Cup. And this is how this all got orchestrated. It was in that dinner where they basically sat down and said, hey, man, let's bury the hatchet and let's just find a way to give the fans what they want. Let's set up this match. And they have. And like, when I talk about chirping, when Brooks Koepka is the one on the tee on hole one and he drives one 300, 320 down the middle, and then Bryson steps up to the tee box and he bombs it 350, 360 down the middle. I want him to turn to Brooksy and said, okay, like, just say some sort of chirp and say, wow, like, that's all you got?
He will. That's what I expect today. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I hope so. I want to see that. Because that'll be what keeps the audience, like me, like you, engaged.
I'll be watching the whole thing regardless.
If they just play with same old simple golf etiquette, it's going to be a waste of time.
No. That won't happen. Also, Phil Mickelson's in the broadcast booth. You know he's going to be bringing the heat. I'm very excited for this. I think it's going to be really good. And on the subject of excitement, there was a report yesterday in Golf Week magazine that, this is very exciting, the PNC Championship, which is the father-son tournament, or I guess like family member tournament that we saw Tiger and his son Charlie play to a seventh-place finish in December 2020. That's the last time we saw Tiger Woods on a golf course. The report is that organizers are keeping a place open for Tiger in the limited field event. Does not mean that he's going to play. We did see that three-second video earlier this week that Tiger's swinging the golf club, at least is on the range. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play, but organizers are remotely optimistic about the possibility. And man, that might break every single viewership record in existence in sports, because who isn't going to tune in not only to see Tiger, but to see Charlie? We remember the revelation he was in December of 2020. Remember the odds that were posted? How many PGA Tour wins will Charlie Woods have? Like, he's falling off. Your boy Vasily just dominating him.
Dominating him in tournaments.
Yeah, not even close. Yes. So I can't wait. Charlie's probably, like, you know, gone through puberty since we've last seen him. He's probably like 6'2", 210, hitting at 330 off.
Probably got a mustache.
Probably a mustache. Movember. Yeah. Maybe he looks like Darren Dreger now, Charlie Woods. Wouldn't that be a look for Charlie? I mean, I think he's like, how old would Charlie Woods
be? The handlebar? I think he's like, no, he was, wasn't he 13? Or no, was he younger last year when he
We'll get him? Our research department. They're looking really spry this morning to delve into that situation with Charlie Woods' age. I don't know. I'm hopeful, obviously. If Tiger's back in the sport, that would bode really well, not only for the PNC Championship, but for the PGA Tour as a whole. So that's where we stand with that. We'll speak to Bob Weeks.
Charlie Woods, by the way, 20 fingers. Used his magical fingers. 12 years old.
12 years old. Okay, so that's how old Charlie is. And his bar mitzvah coming up next year, so we'll look forward to that.
There you go.
Throw him up in the chair, right?
What do they call that? The chair toss?
No, they don't.
No, call it was it the aura?
They call it the hora, yeah.
The hora.
They do it at weddings and bar mitzvahs. So it's going to be very exciting for Charlie Woods when he finally becomes a man.
Okay, so I'm gonna let's put the money where your mouth is right now, because it's fitting how this story surfaced the day before our award-winning segment Pigeon or Peacock. Mm-hmm. Because is Jeff McDonald, our boss, a pigeon or a peacock to believe that Tiger Woods will be ready to play within a month's time?
Well, I would say that Jeff is an eternal optimist when it comes to Tiger Woods. Who wouldn't be? Are we not hopeful that he returns? I don't know if he's going to return. No one has any idea. We're all just speculating. But if the PNC Championship believes there's a chance, I believe there's a chance. I have no idea. I have no inside information. I'm sure Bob Weeks knows. He'll tell us at 9:30, but I think he's got a really
sick mustache going Bob right now. Weeks the handlebars.
Stud. Also giving curling betting picks, which I've been following.
What?
Have not been going well, but we'll talk to Bob when he joins us a little bit later in the show about that. Yeah. And what insight he has on to Tiger and who he's betting on between Bryson and Brooks. Bryson is the betting favorite. Slight at -130. You can get Koepka at +105. So
who do you like? Into
Bryson. I'm not going to cheer for Brooks.
All right.
Bryson's going to pound Brooks into the ground.
Two hundo.
Koepka's going to.
Let that two hundo ride on whatever
you want
to like.
Put two hundo on Koepka?
Yeah, whatever you like.
Oh, no.
You said Bryson.
Oh, you want to bet 200 on Bryson?
I said whatever you like.
Oh, dude, I'm running low on my betting account here. I can't just be.
I am not
running low. I'm just kidding. I'm at an all-time high. Thank you, CFL. Oh, can't wait for Sunday. It's going to be a glorious doubleheader indeed. We have the Morning Scroll coming up next. And Pigeon versus Peacock, the aforementioned at 7:20. And our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger, joining us for Leafs Breakfast at 7:45 here on First Up. It's the Morning Scroll here on First Up. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Kuliakova with you on this beautiful Friday morning. And when I say beautiful, it's like 1 degree. You're like, oh, God, it's freezing. I think it might snow tonight.
That's not good, eh?
It's not good at all, Phil. But what is good is our producer, Arad Asfandi. Who is good? I don't know. Grammatically correct? Whatever. Who cares? We're on sports radio here. This is not the dictionary. Take it away, Arad.
First of all, I just want to give a shout-out to Matt Cause, his Twitter/Instagram feed. Very entertaining right now. If you're a
really?
Fan of wildlife.
Because he's in South Africa, of, right?
He is, yes. And lots of pictures of giraffes and my favorite animal, penguins. So if
really?
Anyone's
Why
a fan, is... give the man a click.
Why is your favorite animal a penguin, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, they're just so awkward, right? Like, flightless bird, lives in cold places. They look like you can hug him, but they'll probably peck you to death if you do, so. Pretty
right.
cool stuff. I love penguins.
What's right, your favorite cool. animal, Coco?
Dogs.
Okay, but, like, more exotic.
More exotic? Probably a monkey.
It's a pretty good answer. I don't really have an answer for a favorite animal. I'll have to think about that. I'll report back a little bit later. I'm sure our audience is desperate to know what my favorite animal is. Yeah, shout out to Carl. I know. Looks like he's having a hell of a time in South Africa, and he may even be sober right now, which would be appalling, to say the least.
Yeah, no kidding.
Moving on. What's next, Rod?
Hell of a time, and the wine tour hasn't even started yet, so great stuff for Carl's coming up. I'll keep the animal stuff together, so a golf course in Calderdale, England, is forced to close for the weekend after two massive pigs, warthogs, have stormed the course and injured many golfers and damaged all the greens.
What?
So we've heard of alligators in Florida. Now we got pigs in England. What's more terrifying to see on a golf course? Like a pig charging at you or an alligator walking slowly towards you?
Well, definitely an alligator to me because they're just scary animals. You know, the warthog or the pig, they're very rare, but when you see them, I mean, you could get a little frightened too, but, you know, maybe you start using your clubs and start swinging at them if they start to...
No way. Not the Sim 2s, man. Are you crazy? Protect those with your life.
True. But I think the most terrifying thing that I could ever see on a golf course would be a snake. Like a big snake.
An anaconda.
They just gross me out, man. Snakes.
That movie still frightens me.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, it sounds like those warthogs were pretty dangerous, running into people and injuring them, and perhaps most egregiously, ruining the greens? Come on, warthogs. Have some more respect for your golf courses.
Exactly. Get out of here.
Losers. I remember I used to work at Richmond Hill Golf Club. This is probably maybe the summer of 2008, 2009, and some guy in the middle of the night decided to, for whatever reason, come and, like, damage all, a bunch of greens on the golf course out of spite, or there was some issue that he had with somebody who was employed by, like, complete loser. Like, honestly, made the course unplayable because there were big chunks of the green taken out because this complete buffoon had some vendetta against somebody else. So that is my recollection of my time at Richmond Hill. And my job was to, we had to, like, kind of rebuild the greens. And that took days and weeks to do. And it really sullied the entire golf course experience, not only for myself, but for all of the patrons. So for all you warthogs out there, stop ruining greens on golf courses.
Yeah. I tell you what, you know what are dangerous animals on the golf courses are those ducks and those swans. Like, if you get close to those things, they'll attack you, man.
Absolutely. I've seen it before.
Have you?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, there we at my course in Cowden Woods, I have seen some, I don't know if they're ducks, but some kind of birdie animal.
Those swans?
Yeah, just kind of like really like come at you because they're scared. I don't know. They're marking their territory. It's very terrifying.
The funniest thing I've seen in a golf video is probably, you know, down south somewhere. There's a guy getting into a fight with a kangaroo on the golf
course. Yeah, oh yeah, I've seen that video. Yeah. Then go ate my baby.
Is that a kangaroo around Big Ben?
Why did that so quick?
How did it's you crazy. Find that so quickly? He's awake. Whoa. 20 Fingers has awoken from his early show slumber, and he is firing on all cylinders. Take it away, Arad.
20 Fingers doesn't drink coffee or sleep, so if anybody wants to know what he does to stay awake, 20 Fingers is the man. Marc Gasol has started his own team. He couldn't get signed this summer, so he has started his own team in the second division of Spanish Basketball League. Why? A team very close to his hometown of Barcelona in the city of Girona. Marc Gasol has started and will start at center for this team this weekend. Carlo, my question to you, when are you going to start your own East Coast League? You and AK can be the D partners. Chris is in Nets. I'll be your first line center. And
First line center for Arad?
Yeah, buddy, you're like the seventh D.
Maybe fourth line winger. You and Cam Jansen. Just be patrolling and intimidating everybody. We would use intimidation like the Dansbury Trashers when they made their mark into the, was it the IHL, UHL, whatever it was at the when they were in existence. Look, I have zero, like, even energy to do anything like that. And if you're Marc Gasol, like, I understand you want to stay busy and, you know, maybe you're not ready to move on from basketball. But, man, just go enjoy your life, man. You've made millions, you know, travel the world, you know, catch on to one of these NBA teams and fly in once in a while. Maybe even be a European scout for one of these NBA teams. Like, even Jaromir Jagr, like, this is a Jaromir Jagr situation of basketball. This guy's like 49 years old and playing on the team that he owns in the Czech Republic. It's like, dude, go enjoy your life, man. I was with my buddy last night, and he's asking me, and he's like, hey, do you want to come play pickup Sunday night? And I looked at him with the biggest eyes and said, are you dumb?
Have you seen my physique?
Why the hell, one, would I want to go play pickup hockey right now? And two, on a Sunday night? Are you high? No, I have zero interest to put any of my equipment on.
Well, it's a reasonable surprised. Ask. Well, it's a reasonable ask. He wants you. I mean, even in your advanced age, you'd still be a damn good player. You'd be the best player in the league easily. Dude, you played in the DEL like 4 years ago. You were the number one D Mannheim. You would be dominant if... But I'm just saying, you can't be critical of him asking because, you know, he's going to shoot his shot, right? It's better to ask and be rejected than not to ask at all.
Fair.
It's what I've learned in my travels.
Ooh, okay, yes. Mr. Bachelor over there. Look, I'm not denying that I'm still confident in my abilities and stuff. But and so he was asking me, he's like, really, I'm so surprised to hear you say that. Like, don't guys, like, really like playing pickup? And I just told him to lean over. I go, look, it's not a matter of me not liking to play pickup, not liking the game of hockey. It's just, in the last couple of years of my career, I really reflected on how much time I wasted playing the game. And one of the things I wasted the most time on was putting on my equipment and taking off my equipment every day. Every day. Like, I would come in after practice sometimes, and I would just be like, ugh. I got to take off my equipment now. And I would just sit in my stall and just talk to guys because that's what I just enjoyed doing. I just didn't want to take off my equipment. And now, like, that's why I enjoy the training part of it. I just put my skates on. Go out, put my skates on, and I'm just out there teaching guys how to play the game of hockey. But to put my whole equipment on and then take it off again, I have zero interest in doing that. Zero.
Okay. There you go. Don't ever, you ever see Carlo on the street in Oakville, Ontario or wherever? Don't ask him to play for your hockey team because the answer will be a resolute no.
Yes,
what else
no
you got,
thanks.
Rod?
No, thanks.
And finally, for all of our NFL fans out there, we already recapped yesterday's games. We're definitely going to talk about all of Sunday's games coming up. One game I assume we're not going to talk about is the Tank Bowl. The New York Jets versus the Houston Texans. The loser is the winner, and the winner is the loser.
Very true.
Put you guys put yourself in a player's shoe. Like, what do you do here where, like, losing is better for your team long-term than winning?
Well, for the players, that's not how you approach it at all. For the coaching staff, that's not how you approach it at all. For the ownership group, sure. Yeah, Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, Bob McNair, the owner of the Texans, yeah, they want to lose. Also, it's week 12. This is not week 17, so it's a little premature to be calling it that. I'm not saying the Jets or the Texans are going to be in the playoffs or anything, but I don't think the players view it like that in this. I know they don't view it that like that in the slightest. They're going to do their damnedest to win. And let me tell you, I need a big performance from Tevin Coleman in my league or I'm screwed. So please give Tevin Coleman some touches. Michael Carter is out. Zach Wilson, hand that ball off to my boy TC. I need a big effort from him.
Yeah, I mean, look, players are full of too much pride to actually go into this game and worry about what the team is planning on for the future. Because for these players, the future might not necessarily be something they're a part of. So what do they care about where the team wants to finish? These guys want to go out and win a football game on Sunday so that they can enjoy the rest of their weeks. And, you know, it's, you know, the Texans too, like, they're the home team. They want to play for the fans that they're playing in front of. And, you know, the Jets, I mean, I don't know what they're playing in front of. Obviously, Zach Wilson will be returning behind center for them. And I don't know how excited he is for that because, you know, he's a guy who's been right now being forced to come back off of injury. So,
forced? I don't know. But what do you mean? That's his job. What, you don't think Zach Wilson wants to play?
Well, he does, but is he ready to play is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they said 2 to 4 weeks. It's been more than four now, so yeah,
okay.
He's ready to rock.
Fair
Zach
enough.
Zach Wilson, big performance.
My question to you is, somebody asked me this yesterday. People that are still alive in a survivor pool, would you choose or think of choosing the Houston Texans this week against the Jets? Home game, Tyrod Taylor. Look, the Texans have played like a better team with Tyrod Taylor behind center.
Listen, Survivor pools this week, who the hell knows? I mean, I would have taken Dallas yesterday for sure. That would have been my pick.
Be out.
And I would be out. But there's no, I mean, minus the Patriots, who are 7-point favorites, no one else is over four. Yeah. So I guess the Patriots would be my pick.
Well, yeah, if you still have them, right? I mean, we're in week 12. They're somewhere down the road where you might have used them.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk to Adam Chernoff about that from Covers.com and the Simple Handicap podcast. He's making his show debut a little bit later, one of my favorite NFL analysts in the business. So that concludes the Morning Scroll. Thanks to Arad for that. We'll tell you where Canada will play in their World Cup qualifier late January. The O-Dog is not happy about it. We'll tell you why next. Give me the shivers. Canada looks to continue its path to qualification for the World Cup in 2022 a little bit later, actually next year. Man, it's crazy. New Year's is not even that far away. It's like 5 weeks away. Where has this year gone? Very sad.
Wow,
but
crazy.
January 30th at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton, Canada will host the United States outdoors in the 23,000-seat stadium. The O-Dog yesterday on Overdrive, not a fan of the outdoor experience. Soccer, January 30th, outside. How do you feel about it, Coco?
I mean, I'm confused. I don't understand this decision at all. What Canada has tried to provide itself with every decision they've made when it comes to home games is an advantage, right? How is an advantage? How are you creating an advantage playing a soccer game outdoors in the middle of the coldest season of the year? And not just in the middle of the coldest season, but think about the location that Canada chose, okay? How are you creating a home field advantage in a stadium that has 23,000 capacity? And how are you creating an advantage playing on turf? To me, when you're trying to create an advantage for yourself of a home game against a storied rival for yourself, you try to put it in a you should try to put it in a place that allows you to have the most people attend that game. Now, BMO Field has 30,000. Rogers Centre in Toronto, you can fit, 45,000 in that stadium?
I don't think Rogers Centre was ever a consideration. Okay, that wasn't possible.
Fair, fine. All I'm saying is, to me, this location makes zero sense to me. What type of advantage are you creating at Tim Hortons Field that has no end zones with fans and can only squeeze 23,000 in that stadium? Wouldn't you want to find a place where you can pack the house with as many people as possible?
Well, I don't know about BMO Field versus Tim Hortons Field. That's one thing. The idea of BC Place playing in Vancouver, that would pose too many travel issues for Team Canada. It would be a lot of travel in a very short period of time, so they opted not to do that. It was just too difficult to make those arrangements, and they felt it would be too daunting for the players. Why they decided to go Tim Hortons Field over BMO Field, I don't know. But clearly, the Canadian side thinks that gives them a better chance, and it's a better venue for them. Who am I to say that they're wrong? I mean, these guys have done a great job so far as picking venues.
But do you not agree with what I'm saying?
7,000 more people at BMO Field versus Tim Hortons Field? Ah, not really.
Grass versus turf?
Well, I mean, clearly they think the turf gives them a better chance than the grass, or they would have picked BMO Field.
Again, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Why doesn't that make sense that a soccer team would know their own personnel better than you do?
Well, I don't know. Isn't it better to play soccer on grass than it is on turf?
Maybe they think that they would be best served playing it on the turf at Tim Hortons Field rather than the grass at BMO.
Fine. If that's what they think, again, I'm confused.
That's what they think.
This.
That is clearly what they think.
Okay, yeah. But here's another thing. Do you think if the U.S. was hosting this game, they would have put it in a place like Cincinnati or Idaho or one of these small, like tall? No, they're putting it in LA, in New York, a place where they can have 60,000 to 80,000 people in the venue.
Apparently, the U.S. is playing in Columbus, so I mean, that's how they're doing.
Okay, how many seats do they have? I mean, what's that? Then
listen, there's only so many venues we have here north of the border where you could fit in a ton of people, and you know, I think if Canada was to play the U.S. at Rogers Centre, would they sell out? Yeah, maybe, but I don't think that was an option for Canada soccer at any point. I think their number of options were pretty slim, unless you want to go to Alberta or Manitoba or Saskatchewan. I don't think they wanted to go back there, especially in the dead of winter. So it was either in Ontario, in southern Ontario, in Hamilton or in Toronto, or in Vancouver at BC Place. And they didn't
should have played in Windsor.
They should have played in Windsor. I think that is something we can absolutely agree upon. no doubt about that. A busy night ahead in sports, day into night. Bryson and Brooks at 4 o'clock. Raptors, Pacers, 8 o'clock. Leafs, Sharks, 10:30. A huge day of sports ahead, and we'll break it all down for you in Hour 2 of First Up, coming up next.